you as the opposition could be like, right, lads, we can do what we want here because there's no other challenge. There's no other challenge.
The game's still going to be refereed.
There's no other challenge.
The game's still going to be... It's not like the referees leave the pitch.
House of Rugby Ireland, here on Joe. Game changed.
Hello and welcome to House of Rugby Ireland here on Joe. I'm Eimear Constantine and I am joined in studio by Fergus McFadden and Ian Madigan. What a day of rugby we had yesterday, and we have loads to chat about in today's show. First off, Fergus, you were in the host show last week. How many times did it take you to do the intro?
First time, Eimear.
First time. Pro. I want to watch my back. Today is also a very special day. It is somebody's birthday in here. I think the 4-0 was what we heard. Ian Madigan, happy birthday to you.
Thank you. 30 again.
Is it your birthday? You keep that very quiet.
We have a little something here for you. So Ian, for your birthday, we got you a lovely little cake here from everybody here at Joe. Not sure if Fergus actually wants to sing you happy birthday, but we might not embarrass you this time and leave you off with that much. But have you got any nice plans for your birthday to celebrate it?
Just down with family tonight, so with mum and dad and my brother. So look, it'd be nice to spend it with them. I haven't seen them in the new year, so
Are you happy about getting old?
Look, I think if you hang around with people, they keep you young. So the younger guys in Ulster are certainly doing that. So look, another year, but keep on trucking on, I suppose.
You're only hitting your prime right now, is all, Ian. That's it. So a really, really exciting day of rugby yesterday. And I think, you know, it was more than any of us expected with especially the last two games. Ireland 32, England 18. Where to start? That brilliant Ireland performance against England, or that crazy finish in Paris. But we'll start it with Johnny Sexton. He said last night that they had been saying for weeks how close they were to performance like that. In terms of Ireland performances since the Grand Slam years, how does that rank, Ferg?
Yeah, I think the last time I saw a performance as good as that from Ireland would have been the All Blacks, really, in the Aviva. I think it was just from the first minute till the very last, we dominated the game and we made that English side look very average. You know, it was so impressive. And I was delighted for the team because there has been pressure on them, some pressure on the coach, and this has it's just finished the Six Nations on such a high note for them, and it's it can be a huge kind of point to just build from here. Like, I think Andy Farrell will now be able to maybe rest a couple of guys that are tried and tested, and maybe going into November or the summer series, if there is games there, he'll be able to try younger guys, you know, in certain positions, and give a bit more exposure. So, they're in a great place after that performance.
It's almost annoying. It's at the end of the Six Nations. I think Ireland fans, Ireland as a whole, are excited. I think the team are excited. They finally clicked, and it's really disappointing that, like, that's the end of the Six Nations for us.
Yeah, certainly. Like, everyone was talking about, you know, England potentially peaking for the last game. You know, there was a lot of talk about the Saracens guys not getting enough game time leading into the competition, that England were building their way through it. But I think it was more, you know, pertinent for Ireland. They were, you know, they very much grew into the competition. The Welsh performance is obviously tainted with that red card, and you know, they came up close against France with a good few injuries in the squad, but the last three games, like, they really found form. It was a very good performance against Scotland. Obviously, you know, we dusted Italy off, you know, with ease. But it all came together, as Ferg said, you know, from every facet of the game. From, you know, we dominated them in the scrum. We won the aerial battle. We, you know, moved England around the park. And it was the best I've seen the interplay from Ireland. You know, backs with forwards, moving the point of contact. You know, it wasn't the one-off rugby, or it wasn't, you know, the high ball game that we've relied on in previous years. It was something that you'd look at and go, we can really build on this, and we can beat the best teams in the world playing rugby like that.
And I think Mike Catt had been criticised about the lack of creativity in attack, and we definitely saw building from the Italian game into the Scottish game, but especially yesterday, the creativity, and two of the best tries Ireland have scored in a long time.
Yeah, brilliant tries. And I think for Jack Conan's try, most players had touched the ball, and just a brilliant sequence of play. We were getting over the gain line nicely after a number of phases, and then Johnny puts in that brilliant kick. which somehow Hugo Keenan won in the air against Elliot Daly, who's outstanding in the air, I think.
With no advantage either.
No, it was just a huge play by Hugo Keenan, and he's just had like a brilliant Six Nations. Like he could be a bolter to go to the Lions, maybe behind Stuart Hogg. I'd say Stuart Hogg is in the driving seat for 15, but by the way he's played, there's no reason why he shouldn't travel. But yeah, that try was just, it was just great to watch. There was a bit of everything. I think the biggest difference in that game for me was just how much we were running onto the ball. You know, we were really running onto the ball. And even when we did have one-off runners off nine, we had variety within that. So the guy that was getting it off nine would tip it on to the guy on the outside who was coming at the full steam ahead, or else on the inside, or else sometimes they'd pull it to Johnny, or even Keith Earl sometimes was running in the 12. They're just, the back seemed very comfortable. And yeah, as you said, Maz, the interplay was outstanding.
No, certainly. Like it had everything in it. And even watching the Scottish game, there was a period I was kind of looking at it, kind of going, you know, are we just going back to the high ball game again? But then I thought we actually put some great passages of play together in that game. And, you know, that 100% grew our confidence going into the English match. But, you know, going into it, I was thinking, you know, England kind of had our number, you know, the last three or four times they've beaten us, and they've beaten us well. You know, they've out-muscled us in the pack. And I was unsure, you know, how are Ireland going to go about this game. And taking them on up front in that forward battle wasn't the way to beat them. Moving the point of contact, as you said, little tips inside and out, playing out the back, you know, running at their kind of fourth, fifth, sixth defender out. The contacts are nothing as, you know, as hard, as opposed to running, you know, tighter to the breakdown. And we certainly did that really well. And as Ferg said, our speed onto the ball was, you know, the best I've seen. And tied into that is like the quality of our passing. And if you look at, like, you look at how England played, and for the whole Six Nations, like their quality of their passing has let them down. And that's something that, like, you come to expect with English sides. Usually they're up there with the best in the world. And you know, we certainly showed them yesterday, you know, what good passing looks like, and, you know, running onto the ball with speed. So it was really positive to watch.
Yeah, it wasn't just one thing they fixed. They fixed everything. You know, it was a system. It was the ruck speed was better. The ball was coming quicker. The ball was better. They were hitting the outside channel. So it was a mixture of things, but it did finally come together. I was a skeptic with Keith Earl's try, and I thought it was completely accidental, you know, really good hands from Jack Conan until the third and fourth and fifth replay, where, and then that clip that was on Twitter of them practicing it in the warm-up. I was complete skeptic about it, but that was phenomenal hands from Jack Conan, but also to get away with the speed of Earlsey. And he had been someone who has been criticised in the last few weeks. You know, why is he starting? Why is he there? I think last week he was phenomenal. And again, this week, amazing. Like at 33 years of age?
He's 32.
32 years of age, yeah.
Yeah, 32, and just signed another year, and justifiably so. He's been playing brilliantly. He's just the type of guy, from playing with Earlsey and from watching him, he never lets the team down, whether it's for Munster or Ireland. And he's one of those players that stands up on the big days, and he did again yesterday. Like, he had no right to finish that try, really, when it got, you know, flicked back into him from Jack. And to step Johnny May, you know, still going at full pace and put him off balance by going in it and go on the outside, was just brilliant finish. You know, he was running there like he was 21, so who's to say he might not travel to over in the lines as well after touring before. But I thought Jack Conan actually was brilliant. I thought I was delighted for him, because he's had a tough year with injuries, and, you know, there was the back row battle in Leinster, there's so much quality there that was, you know, question marks whether he was going to get back in there at one stage. And then he's gotten his opportunity after playing some, you know, putting in some great performances in Leinster. Andy Farrell brought him back in, gave him his opportunity, and he fully just took that. Like, he outplayed Billy Vunipola. I think you saw, like, he's so comfortable in those 15-metre channels that time.
He got the ball
out the back from Johnny, and he dummied and went and made, you know, a great gain line. And then even the decision-making around the ruck there, the pick and go, just a really dynamic eight. And I think, you know, he could be he could be a really good option for Ireland going forward.
Yeah, really, really positive, really good. Another thing, Johnny Sexton played a full 80 minutes yesterday. Again, you know, what did he score? 22, 23 points out of the full score. Still dominating it, still playing well, still top of his game. How difficult is that to do, to stay at the top of your game for so long, and a really good performance again from him yesterday?
Yeah, for me, Johnny's been the form out half in the Six Nations. You know, he outplayed four completely yesterday. The other right half you'd probably look at would be someone like Dan Bigger, maybe. But yeah, look, I think Johnny, the way he works, he's just so true to his process. And he would have fully believed, even after the first two games, he would have seen the direction that Ireland are going, and he would have been very planned out with the coaches and working with the players to put out a performance like that. And it was interesting hearing him talking after the game and saying, you know, the only concerns Ireland will have will be backing up this performance. And that just, you know, showed the confidence he had and how well prepared the team were. And, you know, even from talking to the guys who were in the squad, you know, they said that they'd been training really well. The performance hadn't quite been clicking, you know, on match day. They definitely took a lot of confidence from the Italy and Scottish game. And it certainly came together for, you know, the one that mattered.
It absolutely did. And that leads us nicely to this clip from Johnny on his team's win and Hugo Keenan on how important Sexton and Robbie Henshaw are to the team.
Yeah, it was brilliant. It was the performance, apart from the first 5-10 minutes, it was the performance that we wanted to produce against one of the real top sides. And we feel that, you know, England, with the results they've had over the last number of years, would be up there with the best sides in the world, and we wanted to put in a performance, you know, that did us, you know, we've worked hard over this last 8 weeks, and we felt that we weren't too far away, and we said these things, and I don't think you guys sort of listened to us, and you know, we felt we weren't too far away, and I think it all came together today in parts. Still lots we can get better at, and you know, we need to keep getting better. That's the key now. Well, it's Faz and Caddy and the players. You know, the team stuff is led by Andy and Caddy is obviously in charge of the starter plays. And you know, it's a little bit of everything, isn't it? It's a little bit of, you know, the forwards improving the set piece so much from the last. That's important for your attack. The ruck being improved is big for your attack. And the players buying into and doing their job, like, that's, you know, it's a mixture of things, you know what I mean? And it was never, you know, when things weren't clicking for a couple of games, it was never one person's fault, or, you know, it was a collective thing. And look, we saw some good stuff today. It's still stuff that we can, like I said, get better at. And you know, we set a standard in some areas today that we need to keep, you know, for next November or summer tour, where I don't, you know, it's hard to know what's next, and then into next year's Six Nations. You know, we've got to keep getting better, and now we have to strive for consistency.
Look, like, to start, like, he's an unbelievable player. Like, he's got that experience, doesn't he? And like, slotting those kicks today was just huge. I know his kicking accuracy this whole campaign's been brilliant, but like, to keep putting the pressure on England on a side like that, to keep the foot on their neck was just huge today. Keep that scoreboard ticking over and put the pressure on them. And that's what he brings. Like, he's an unbelievable leader, unbelievable captain. And he's so passionate about the team and stuff. So it was great to see him go so well and perform.
Robbie Henshaw seemed to be covering every blade of grass there and just out there kind of smashing into tackles as well. What is it like to have a guy like him playing on the pitch and just making big hits and big plays all over the place?
Oh, he's an animal, isn't he? He was unbelievable today, and he's been a standout performer for the whole campaign, in fairness to him. Like, he keeps stepping up game after game, delivering. Like, he can do it all, to be honest. He's got that whole-rounded game. He's a great footballer. And he's a big, powerful guy, and then he brings that to his defence as well. So, it's been unbelievable to see him go so well. And he's someone who I've gotten a lot closer to since making my debut. So it was enjoyable seeing him play so well. And it's been great.
The opening 30 minutes were dominated by Robbie Henshaw. He seemed to be everywhere in defence and in attack. And I think the most notable thing about Henshaw is when Ireland were, you know, under pressure in the first 15 minutes, he was the guy to step up, and he was the one who led the charge both in attack and defence. And it's in times, you know, of tough times where you need a player like that to stand up and to step up. And Robbie was the guy who did that at the start of the game yesterday.
Yeah, he was. And Robbie's always one of those players, but like his performance yesterday was just, it was incredible, really. Because the reality is, in the first 10 minutes, when England went 3-0 up, they also had an opportunity to, you know, to score that try once they kicked the line out. And I think they launched off a line out or a scrum, and Robbie hit, I think he hit Owen Farrell or maybe Elliot Daly out the back, and really good read, and just completely shut it down. And it was at a stage where, you know, they get over the game line there, they make a bit of momentum, you know, it could be 8-10-0 up. And he just had so many of those kind of game-changing moments. In attack, he was outstanding. In the air as well, like repeatedly throughout the Six Nations, he's been brilliant in the air, putting all sorts of pressure on. So, I think he's got to be in the driving seat to be in the centre in the on that Lions tour for the test, because whether it's 12 or 13, I think yesterday showed that, you know, you kind of there's question marks over what's his actual best position between 12 and 13, because he's been brilliant for Ireland when he has that opportunity at 13 as well. But just such a good player, such a good reader, and great game.
Yeah, like defensively, it looked like he was kind of defensive leader of the backs, and Ireland really rattled England. You know, they changed up. You know, there was sometimes they went with like a hard rushing four, where, you know, 10, 12, 13, open wing, just went and slammed the door. And then there was other times when they kind of sat off a bit, and England didn't know what Ireland were doing.
Yeah.
Like, we were dictating to the attack.
And George Ford throws that pass into touch because he was spooked at that stage.
He doesn't know whether they're coming or going. Like, that looks like just a poor pass, but the reality is there's a lot going on in Ford's head. He's like, is that guy shooting? Is he not?
Especially, you know, England, who are in the past, you know, have pinned teams back from their kicking game, from their really strategic kicks, they weren't existent yesterday because they didn't have the time to make those decisions and to pin teams back and to pin Ireland back yesterday.
Really? Yeah, I think that George Ford's kicking out of hand, like, just wasn't good enough. But the reason it wasn't good enough was because it was back football he was getting. So there was an awful lot more pressure being put on Ford when he was trying to, put those kicks in from Josh van der Fleer, from Tadhg Byrne, from all of the forwards. And that strategy just wasn't working for them. So when you take that away from England, really, they just have the power game. And Ireland actually fronted up. And I know you said, Mads, we did move them around and all the rest, but I actually thought we physically dominated them as well. I thought, like, one that summed it up was CJ running...
3v1.
CJ running in, and there was three of them tried to hit him as hard as he could. He just ran straight at them. And it looked like he sparked Tom Curry. And Billy Vunipola was a bit worse for wear. And then not long after that, Josh van der Fleer ripped the ball off Billy as well. So just moments like that, that just, like, you could see the English were looking around going, what do we have to do here? And just such a complete performance. And just hats off to the players, but the coaches as well, for getting the guys just so well prepared for that game.
Yeah, absolutely. You said moments in the game that have turned... that do turn the game, and it's only little things, but little things like the stuff that Tadhg Byrne did yesterday. He was a menace, and he doesn't matter where he is, whether he's in the back row or second row, he still does exactly what he's supposed to do and does it in such a good way.
Yeah, like, you know, everyone's talking up Itoje before the game, and you know, effectively Tadhg did what you'd expect Itoje to do. He came up, actually, bar the start of the game, he completely outplayed him. He barely saw Itoje as the game went on. But yeah, Tadhg's ability to get over the ball, he's up there at the best in the world. You know, he's coming up with consistently 2, 3, 4 turnovers a game. And like, they're big, big moments. And like, the difference for a team when you're winning a penalty around the halfway line and suddenly you're attacking it, you know, attacking in the 22. And when you're as organised as Ireland are, like, every single time we seem to get into the England 40, we came away with points. And like they, like England actually had plenty of opportunities. You know, they had probably five or six attacking opportunities. They came away with, I think, 3 or 6 points, you know, in the first half for the amount of chances they had. And that takes its toll, you know. And
other things, like Byrne got a turnover after the kick receipt. He just got in the, you know, he created a maul there.
That's a huge moment.
Like, it's the smarts that he has as well. It's the game understanding and to know to come around on the other side of it and create that maul. And like, they're the moments that they're so little, but they're so, so huge to Ireland.
100%. And it just makes this final. I think some of the performances from the guys yesterday makes this final this week really exciting. I think some of the Munster lads are playing some of the best rugby of their lives. And you know, some of the Leinster guys are coming into good form as well, but then there's also injuries in the Leinster camp, so it makes for a great game. But together, they all played outstanding.
Yeah, another guy who got quite a lot of criticism in the last while has been Conor Murray. And bizarrely, you know, there was a lot of talk in the media about why didn't he come on last week at all. I think he put those critics to bed. And what do you think yesterday? He, again, will be such a standout player for Munster next weekend, but played again.
It was very much the kind of Conor Murray, you know, we've come to expect. You know, it was just one of those games where he was just on it. Like, everything he did, he executed really well. His box kicking was great. Gave the wingers chase in every chance. I thought his speed was really good. You know, people have talked about, like, Craig Casey and Jameson Gibson-Park, that maybe they're bringing a bit more speed to the game. I'm sure Connor's been aware of that. But his ability yesterday to get to the breakdown quickly and keep the ball moving was a huge part of why Ireland's attack was so fluid. But yeah, like, he's, you know, another guy who's definitely going to have played himself into Lions contention off the back of that performance. You know, up till the game yesterday, it's probably been a frustrating Six Nations for him. You know, the team got off to a slow start, then he picks up an injury. And it was probably a big call to put him back in for that. In fairness to Jameson, I thought he played well last week. But, you know, Murray showed his true class and his experience yesterday. And it was a brave call by the coaches, and it paid off.
I think his kicking game is always consistent as well. You know, you always know that these kicks are going to be. I think that's one of his strengths. And yes, you know, there was a time where Ireland went too and relied too heavily on his kicking game. But I think he reads it perfectly when to kick. And with the likes of Keenan or Earlsey there outside, you know, it's a game plan you have to implement.
Yeah, definitely. I think when you see Hugo Keenan getting up and winning that ball, that's why Ireland have the strategy sometimes to kick. So it's that those calculated moments where they know it's the right time. Johnny's getting the right ball, Connor's getting the right ball. But I actually thought it was really encouraging to see that Connor wasn't really box kicking kind of from the halfway line and into the green zone of England's 22. So, because, you know, in years gone by, and maybe recently when we weren't playing great in the autumn, that was happening quite a lot and it was quite negative. Whereas we were just playing. We were playing in the right parts of the field. And then when Connor did have the kick, he executed perfectly.
Yeah, absolutely. We can't move on, I suppose, without chatting about CJ Stander. What a man. What performance again yesterday. You know, he's been consistent. 150 caps for Munster, 51 caps for Ireland. Disappointing week, I suppose, of that news about CJ's retirement. But he was very emotional afterwards. I know we were chatting about beforehand. His post-game interview, you know, showed the emotion and around the game, and I suppose around the retirement as well.
Yeah, I don't think anyone saw that coming. You know, he's obviously come to the decision. It must have been a very tough period with his. You know, he's got a daughter, and his wife is in South Africa with their baby daughter. So, and I'm sure he's been missing that family time. And this is maybe just it seems to be a decision where he wants to try and go out on top, and he's certainly doing that. Like, still playing incredible rugby, and yeah, it's been an amazing servant for both Munster and Ireland, and I think, you know, he'll be a big loss to the camp because he was probably a bit of a leader in there, but all the best to him anyway, and I'm sure Munster will give him a good send off this week. They'll try it anyway.
Hopefully they will. Yeah, absolutely. Here's Andy Farrell on CJ's final game in the green jersey and his team's win.
Well, Yeah, I've just said to him in the changing rooms though that he can be as emotional as he wants to be now, because he's given his heart and soul to the jersey, you know, to the green one and to the red one, and he's a chance to play in a cup final there for Munster next week. So we wish him all the best with that. But it's been an emotional week that we've tried to keep a lid on it as best he can. And you know, you can say whether we should have brought that out or not, but it was fitting that CJ was able to say goodbye to his friends and tell them the truth and where he's coming from and for reasons why, etc. And how they've responded to him and how he's kept a smile on his face has been totally fitting to what this team is about. And we're delighted that we're able to put a performance together for CJ to send him off in the right way. We're delighted that we've managed to control the emotion in the right way. He's emotional in the changing rooms, but a happy emotional. You know, he's I cannot say enough about him. You know, as a bloke, he's the most kind-hearted, most genuine bloke that you'll ever meet, and he'll be a mate forever.
So there's no doubt that CJ Sander will be difficult person to fill, or difficult shoes to fill for CJ Sander. But you know, the back row is not somewhere we have lacked in strength and depth in Ireland. You know, there's so many amazing players out there, and you know, we saw Jack Conan stepping in, not having played a lot of rugby, international rugby, in the last while, but slotting in seamlessly. Who do we think will be the next CJ Sander?
I don't think that CJ Sander had his own style of play, and I don't think anyone's going to win there and try to do what CJ did. He did what he did very well. But I think there's some really exciting guys coming through. You know, Caelan Dorris has been brilliant. And unfortunately for him, he was having issues with concussion, and that kind of halted his charge to try, you know, grasp that eighth jersey maybe, and maybe even try push the likes of CJ to six or Peter Manny. And I've no doubt that he will get back in the Irish team at some stage. But you saw what happened yesterday. Like, Jack Conan, just he brings something different. I think his athleticism and his speed and decision making, as we said,
yeah,
with the ball in hand on the edges there, on top of being extremely physical when he needs to be, it's a great option. So some nice headaches there for the coaching staff going forward.
Yeah, like as you said, that both Jack and Caelan, they offer something a bit different. You know, they mightn't have the repeat effort that CJ has. It's probably his biggest strength, his ability to just keep going. And he puts in, you know, phenomenal carries. A lot of the time, his carries are nearly just to get parity to the gain line, keep your team in the phase of play. But I think that, you know, the two guys you mentioned there, they probably have a bit more to their game. You know, a bit more subtle footwork, their ability to tip the ball on. So
They're better footballers.
I
would have said that they're better footballers, and I don't think that's harsh on CJ. I think that, as you say, his game is the repeat effort, the like 20 carries a game. Yeah. You know, could be 20 tackles on top of that, but a huge work rate. But probably not the same athlete. Well, isn't the same athlete as the likes of a Jack Cullen, yeah, or a Caelan that has those other attributes.
Yeah, and in fairness, down in Munster, like, Gavin Coombs has stepped up. You know, he's taken all his opportunities really well, and in these good clubs, you know, when a big player leaves, they're not going to stand still and mourn it. You know, Munster's a finely tuned machine; it's going to move on very quickly. And you know, not that CJ would be forgotten, but you know, there's guys who are going to step in and step up.
Yeah, and I do think, look, there's no fear of the Ireland back row. I think there's plenty of depth, and the future is absolutely bright in looking at that back row there. Another main talking point of the game yesterday was Bundiaki's red card. I suppose, any issues with it? Andy Farrell said that he felt that Vunipola could have dipped his head into it. I think, you know, everything looks worse in slow-mo, doesn't it?
No, it's a red card. Yeah, and I know, you know, both players and supporters are probably getting a bit frustrated with, you know, the number of red cards we've seen. But for me, until the players start realising, look, these are the rules and you've got to start changing your technique, we're going to keep seeing them. And I think it's going to happen, you know, where players are actually going to realise, I'm in a bad position here and we're going to see some guys having to pull out of tackles and be a bit more passive. And I actually think it could create a bit more space on the pitch. Mm. You know, but you can't carry your shoulder at that height anymore. Like, it's not like Billy's a small guy. He's huge and he's tall. And, you know, it's scary when you see a big guy like that getting knocked out. Like, there was serious force behind it. Not for me. It's a clear red. And, you know, I'm sure he's going to get a lengthy enough ban off the back of it.
Yeah, it's never nice to see people, you know, that those sort of head knocks, it really isn't. And the force that it must have taken to knock someone like him out, like the amount of contacts he takes in games, and he's always absolutely fine. So, yeah, listen, I don't think there's any defending Bundy. Like, I'm sure Bundy would agree that it was just a red card. He caught him straight in the chin. And it's not for Billy Vunipola to worry about what someone's going to do or where his head is going. I don't think it's a very valid point to say that he dipped his head. He's got to be aware there. And he was quite upright. And it was unfortunate. But listen, it didn't cost Ireland. And if anything, actually, Bundy went off and we still played better rugby than them. And we still played them off the park. And they did put on a bit of pressure and they scored those couple of tries. But really, we outplayed them for the full game, and that was including when we went down to 14.
Yeah, like before that red card, you know, I think it was 26-6. I was looking at it going, we have England absolutely beaten here. You know, this could end up being 40-6. You know, it had the look that it was going to be a complete thrashing. And it nearly looked the opposite to what it looked like in autumn. You know, I thought in watching that game, I was like, geez, England have us broken here. They could really pull away, and they didn't. But it was a complete flip of what happened there, and as you said, we just completely played them off the park.
Mm. I think the one of the standout comments from the commentary for me when I was watching was Michael Corcoran said that when Ireland scored the Jack Conan's try, the Irish lads were back on halfway in a huddle, talking, and you know, clear messages obviously being sent in from. You know, Connor, CJ, the leaders, as Johnny was taking the kick, and the English lads were, Michael Corcoran said, the English lads were just scattered everywhere. It looked like they were social distancing. And you just wonder, they were so far from being dialed in for that game. Like, I don't know what it was. Like, even Owen Farrell gives away that penalty where he does the extra roll and he's smiling afterwards. It's like, you know, there's a few things like that. I just think that...
It's mindset, really, isn't it?
It was just a great day for Irish rugby to do that to a really good English side and make them look lost, really.
What about England, though? Champions last year, Autumn Nations Cup winners too. They're now going to finish fifth place and Eddie Jones is under severe pressure again.
I don't think many people out there would be too sorry for Eddie Jones being under pressure. He doesn't do himself...
How have they fallen apart so badly?
Any favours? Well... I mean, they were World Cup finalists, so huge expectation. And if anything, they were probably very disappointed with how they performed in the final. Obviously, South Africa, well-deserved winners, but going into that final, they were probably favourites. And I think from there, I don't think it's been a complete fall from grace, but they're just not the same team they were. They're quite inconsistent. Like, last week was you know, a really strong performance for them in the second half against France. They turned the screw. And I suppose the worry yesterday for Ireland was, were they going to turn the screw like they did for the second, like they did against France, and do the same to us? And I just think Ireland's strategy and composure just shone through, and they just didn't allow any way for England to get back into the game.
Ian, is it the loss of those big players like Tuilagi, Underhill, Launchbury, or, you know, was it the lack of game time that the Saracens boys had? Can you put it down to those different things?
Yeah, there's definitely an element of them being too loyal to the Saris guys. I don't think that worked out for them in this Six Nations. But also, you'd have to be concerned with their discipline. You know, it definitely cost them a couple of games. And for me, looking back like at the Autumn Nations...
But that discipline thing comes down from the top. Like, you know, we all know that we've all been coached by maybe some coaches that didn't drive the highest standards, maybe in around the place off the field, the way they talk to people, the way they carried on. And that just filters down very quickly. And I think that they, you know, their big game players do give away an awful lot of penalties. Like, Itoje is a bit of a penalty machine for
them. Like, he'd be pulled off on any other team. Like, the amount of penalties he gives away, like, it's just... Like, I know captains that I've had would just absolutely berate them for that amount of penalties per game.
Yeah. No, it's 100% from the top down. And even seeing, like, a coach making three substitutions at half-time, it just looks like he's kind of out of control, especially, like, seeing you're out half going off at half-time. So much has gone wrong. Like, the game plan clearly hasn't worked. You're then deciding that you're going to go with a different guy who probably hasn't been running at out half. You're going to completely change your back line. Mm. It just didn't look like there was much thought behind it. He looked like someone who was really scrambling.
Well, look, it was a great day for Ireland anyway, either way. So what a chaotic finish in Paris, however. France 32, Wales 30. France were down to 14 men and trailing 30-20 with 20 minutes to go. I had to watch the match back again and figure out how the hell did they do it. Like, how did they end up being 10 points down and manage to come back again? Ferg, it was a phenomenal finish.
It was an incredible finish. It was just an unbelievable game of rugby to watch as a neutral, and particularly nice for every Irish person after in high spirits after we won. But I couldn't believe that Wales didn't win the game, because when Rhys Samet tries to score that try in the corner, and it looked like it did, but the TMO said that it touched off. But that was like 2 inches.
Yeah.
It was such a good effort for him to finish. They score that try there.
It's over.
Realistically, that game is put to bed, and somehow France just clawed their way back into it. And I just think the way France did that, it's a scary proposition to think what this French side could be in a couple of years, because they're building something really special. Like, to do that to a really experienced Welsh side that were going for a Grand Slam and pull it out of the bag at the end was very impressive. I don't think Wales helped themselves. Obviously, going down to 13 men, I think they pressed the panic button a small bit when France got within that score. But still, France had to show the composure and get down on that. Like, they had some beautiful interplay between the backs and forwards to get it out to Brice Doulin. But what the game actually, like, after the match, after both games, I was going, like, this just points out how much we miss the crowds at the game. Can you imagine the noise in the Stade de France there, and the noise in the Aviva with the performance that Ireland put in? So, such a shame.
Yeah, it really was an incredible performance from both sides. You know, I thought Wales played brilliant stuff as well. You know, and a lot had been said leading up to it that, you know, they'd been lucky in some of their games. But I thought against England, Wales were brilliant, played some great stuff. And yeah, it was just, as you said there, they probably pushed the panic button too soon. Like, I think when you're scrambling there and a team is unrelenting with their attack, you've got to be really smart when you infringe. Mm. And like, you look at Liam Williams' one there, like, they're not under pressure. It's around the halfway line. They've just put a clearance kick in. You don't need to do something stupid like that.
The end of that game was just pandemonium, like, because you had, I can't remember the name of the back rower, the French back rower they got. Is it Willemsen, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Willemsen gets the red as well. Like, you know, and to be honest, I didn't...
And that try was disallowed as a result, and then the penalty...
The try was disallowed, so they go down to 14, but then, like, you know, Wales are down to 14, then they're going to go down to 13. It was just so much going on in the
game.
And
France had been held up about 4 or 5 times in that period of time. They were Wales were under severe pressure there, held up. Penalty advantage, score try disallowed, red card. Like, there was just, it was so hard to keep track of what was happening.
Liam Williams was, I don't know if he practices that at training or something, but he is incredible at doing, like, getting his hand under
ridiculous.
The ball. Unbelievable. And really, I suppose, actually, in the balance of it, Josh Adams' try, you could argue, you know, was that really a try? In fairness, you like to see the TMO giving the benefit to the attackers.
Yeah.
But question marks over that. So maybe it cancelled out with the Rhys Samet one in the end.
Yeah,
I agree. I didn't think it was, and I think the way that Luke Pearce worded it was strange too. It was almost like on-field decision is a try. Can you show me why it isn't? And the way he worded it was almost like I'm giving this try. He was dead cert on that, and it looked like it was held up.
Yeah, it was just such a good game. I think like we were talking before the show, like, really feel for Alan Wynne-Jones in a way. You know, he's been just an incredible competitor and player for so long, and you know, we'll be going on the Lions if he stays fit. We'll probably captain the Lions, but it would have been a pretty good landmark, or pretty cool landmark, for him to get four Grand Slams, and that one unfortunately slipped away. But they could still win the competition depending on what happens next week with France and Scotland.
Yeah, there was a lot of talk in the last few weeks, and I suppose again yesterday, with the amount of cards, amount of TMO decisions, amount of, you know, there's a lot of communication among the referee and the TMO these days. And how did they do in those big calls yesterday? Like, there was a lot. There was the red card on the eye gouging. Was that an eye gouge? Was it accidental? Should it have been a yellow? Should it have been a red? We were chatting about Rhys Sammet's missed try. You know, should there be a rule that's in?
Yeah, I think the ref did a very good job. You know, it was the kind of game where he could nearly lose control. But I'm a big fan of Luke Pearce. I like the way he communicates with the players. He keeps the game moving. For me, the red card, I don't think he's intentionally eye gouging him, but I still think it's a red card, because he's got to think that he's going to be around his face, you know, and you just can't grab like that, you know, whether it catches someone's mouth, their ear, gets into their eye, even just scratching your face, like, you know, for me personally, I wouldn't be a fan of that.
You look like you've got the few over the years.
I don't think any player now is going out with the intention of eye gouging someone, you know, but at the same time, it's a bit reckless, it's a bit careless, and it looks terrible on the slow-mo. But other than that, I thought the other cards were fairly spot on. You know, there's some cynical ones in there.
Yeah, I felt some of the Welsh players were probably plugging it a little bit too much to try. I know they were going back to look at it, but like calling for him to go a little bit, and there was a couple of them in the ref's ear, and I don't like to see that either. It's all well and good if the captain maybe mentions to look at something, but you don't want to see that, you know. And yeah, he got sent off, but as you say, I don't think there was any intent behind it, because he wasn't even, like, he wouldn't have even been looking at where his hand was, really. He was just trying to flick him over the ruck. So, but listen, hats off to France. They still managed to pull it out of the bag with 14.
Yeah, there was a lot of that actually yesterday, where there was a lot of communication with the referee outside of the captains. Even was Fiku held up, and they thought he got a try, and they were pleading at the ref to go back and look at that as well. Among the drama of the last 10 minutes, there was that as well. There was so much to talk about. But
it'd be good to see, like, I know in the NRL they've got, like, the captain's challenge. So, like, if you're not happy with a call, whether it's a knock-on or a high shot, you get one go where you can go to the ref. Can you review that?
Teams could start
taking... No, just one chance.
But teams could start taking the mickey then, because then if you say after 30 minutes there's a big call and I'm the skipper and I go, I need to challenge that, then as the opposition could be like, right lads, we can do what we want here, because there's no other challenge.
There's no other challenge. The game's still going to be refereed.
There's no other challenge.
The game's still going to be, it's not like the referees leave the pitch. They're still there.
I do agree with you, because I think that it is, there's a fair bit of time. It does add to the drama of the game at times, and it's a big talking point for fans and spectators. It is, these kind of decisions are, you know, people do like to talk about them, but I do think it takes away from the game at times, and I do think it can stop the flow of a match as well, and you don't like to see that. So if the referee and his TMO and fourth officials could just make the decisions a little bit quicker. So sometimes it's a little bit dragged out.
Yeah, yeah. No, it is. And like the way the game's going now, like the TMO is nearly more important than the ref. It's like, how well can he analyse the game and pick up high shots? And, you know, it's something you want to be careful with as well. You don't want like games going on for 100 minutes.
Mm. No, absolutely not. Post-match, Fabien Galthié was not shy about what he felt was Welsh play acting. He declared, if you really watch the reaction of the Welsh players, they specialise in making the opponents get red cards. Their body language is quite clear. I hope the referee takes that into consideration. I don't think Paul deserves a sanction. Does Galthié have a point there? Do you think the players are being told to exaggerate?
We're reading between the lines there. He's basically saying that Wales are good at
acting.
Well, they're good at drawing red cards out of a ref. And I don't really know what to take from that, to be honest. Yeah. I don't really know how you could do that. But Maybe he's pointing out that what we just talked about there, that he felt that the Welsh were making a fair bit out of that, and I think the player had happened to, I think it was it Jones, the prop, that Willem said she grabbed by the face. he still remained on the field, and you know he was okay. But his reaction was like, you know, David Ginola playing for Newcastle back in the day. He was rolling around the place on the ground.
Also, earlier on in the game, Ficu got a high tackle and he was like screaming and roaring for it, and it was barely even touched.
I think we're going to have a period now where like players are still adjusting to how these like high shots are being reffed. That like you're going to see players who receive a high shot, they're just going to stay down because they're going to go, well, I know I got a shoulder to the head there. I'm fine. But if I get up, it's not going to be reviewed. If
Does
I
that
stay
happen
down,
to you a few weeks ago?
I got up and dusted myself off here. No, but if you continue on, there's a good chance it's not going to be seen and not going to be checked. Whereas if you stay down and the play has to be stopped, you can be guaranteed the TMO is going to go, oh, well, what actually happened here? Jesus, shoulder to the head, red card. So I think there is definitely going to be a period of time where, while players are adjusting and realising you can't put in these high shots anymore, we're going to continue to see stoppages in play, more red cards.
The reality is that, say if Bundy hit Billy Vunipola as he did, but he was absolutely fine, the ball was recycled, they kept playing. And then maybe 45 seconds later, the play breaks down and the team was like, oh, I think we should look at this. Like,
probably yellow.
Well, yeah, maybe it's not. Maybe it's not a red because he might go, well, the player's fine. There's a bit of mitigation and la da da. Whereas, like, Billy was just knocked out there. So it can be dependent on what actually happens to the player as well. And I think if you have players carrying on, like, trying to draw that, as I say, out of the referees, it's never good. But hopefully that doesn't come into the game.
No, but...
Yeah, at the end of the day, this law has been brought in for safety of the players, not for, you know...
Which is needed as well, particularly with all of the reporting and the some of the ex-players that have come out around concussion and all that. So the more care that's taken, the better for the game.
France can now win the championship if they beat Scotland by more than 20 points and with a try-scoring bonus point next Friday in Edinburgh. That should be a cracker. Right, we'll take a quick break now and be back with some more Six Nations and Pro 14 final talk in part two. To take you there, producer Pat caught up with my Ireland teammate Anna Capeless during the week to talk about the Tackle Your Feelings campaign with Rugby Players Ireland and Zurich, encouraging people to be kind online.
Yeah, all well, all guns blazing. We have a little bit of time off now, which was, unexpected because we should have been playing Spain like last weekend, followed by a weekend off, but obviously that was called off. So we're a bit of time off to kind of regenerate, reboost and go again now running into the Six Nations.
Yeah, we gave Emer the weekend off from House of Rugby there. We gave her a weekend off. So I think she's going to be back this weekend, straight back into it.
Oh, great. She won't know herself with the weekend off.
Yeah. I'd follow you on Twitter, and you'd see you'd be getting up behind campaigns, or you don't really mind coming out and kind of sharing your opinion out there as well. Like, it's good to see. Like, I know some of your teammates, they kind of, they don't want to kind of rock the boat too much, or they just want to keep the head down and keep working. But you're happy enough to kind of get out there and engage your people in a good way, and even like defend yourself as well every now and then.
Yeah, I hope so. And for me, and for a lot of my teammates as well, you know, taking part in kind of debate or like standing up to people or defending myself or defending me and my teammates or my sport that I play. It's important to me. Like, trust me as well, there's a lot of tweets I've written and I've been like hovering over the send button and I haven't sent it because, you know, like that, you do have to think about the people that you're representing, and you don't want to get into a big massive confrontation with anyone online. But sometimes I do take the decision like, no, this is what I believe in and this is what I, you know, stand up for, and I hope that what I say is kind of respectful of the teams that I represent and my teammates and things like that, even though obviously any view I express, like anyone, you know, on Twitter, social media, they're my own views. And it is important to me to, you know, use my voice, my platform to, you know, hopefully, you know, spread a good message on whatever topic that might be.
I don't know, like, you might not have seen the full details of it there because they only announced it this morning, but already been asked about it already, but World Rugby were announcing the details of this WXV tournament where it's, you know, hopefully, you know, if there's a top three Six Nations finish, you get to compete against the likes of, you know, New Zealand, Australia, even Canada and USA. Like, that's got to be, it's great to see a bit of progress made there, isn't it?
Definitely. You're right. I haven't seen much in it. I only just, I've seen probably just as much as you have about it. I didn't even know it was called WXV. I just saw that there was a new tournament. So that's exciting, especially after, you know, all the disappointing news this year of things being postponed and pushed off and one thing after the other. And so it's really nice to get a bit of good news and something really big to aim towards now. It's not just, you know, usually for us, it's like Six Nations, World Cup. And then you go again, and to have something kind of in the interim now to aim for that, you know, has a bit of silverware at the end, you know, because we've got, you know, we've been lucky to take part in Autumn Internationals the last few years, but, you know, they're kind of token tests really. Whereas, you know, an actual tournament, a world tournament, like that's amazing. And I'm really happy to hear that announcement this morning.
I was chatting to Leah Lyons, like, who's over with Queens as well, and she was having to take a job in Tesco, you know, like, when, because she had lost a coaching job at a college as well. And, you know, that type of stuff that people might not be aware of, like, that here's an Ireland international, you know, having to go and, you know, get a regular kind of job, like, just to kind of keep going because something else is kind of falling through. I was wondering how it worked out for yourself. Like, what happened when all rugby stopped? Like, were you able to still work away, or, like, what was your situation?
I was working for Harlequins Foundation as a development coach, which I absolutely loved. And, like, to be honest, it was like my dream job, like, because I'm a teacher, I'm a qualified teacher. And when I last year with Harlequins, I decided to work part time so that I could fully commit to training throughout the week. So I, you know, I had a worked out a schedule with Harlequins Foundation that I could work around my training schedule. So that was really great. Frustratingly, with the pandemic, I moved back to Ireland for a bit and then I went back to the UK and then things had kind of changed. So I lost that job essentially because from all the kind of moving around, and that was disappointing. But it's now left me in a place where I you know, I decided recently just to come back to Ireland to focus on the World Cup qualifiers, which then were postponed. So it was all just kind of one thing after the other. So, you know, I spent a lot of years in college studying languages and becoming a teacher, and now I'm, like, you know, just making coffee. Just started working in a coffee shop, which is fine. Okay. Yeah. And that's fine for me, and I'm happy to do that, you know, to put my playing career, you know, first, you know, in these last few years of my playing career, to prioritize that. But it means that, you know, like Leah going taking a job in Tesco, like, you know, me going making coffee, even though, to be fair, all those days that I was, like, when I was teaching, you know, and marking books and you're marking exams like late into the night and I was stressed and all I was saying to myself was, like, I wish I just worked in a coffee shop. So now I'm just taking advantage of that and just kind of getting by for now, and waiting to see what's going to happen with the schedule. Because if the schedule opens up, and, you know, depending on what fixtures are to come in the next couple of months, if there's an opportunity to go back and finish out the season with Harlequins, I will. You know, it's another year now till the World Cup, so it remains to be seen where I'll go from here. But, you know, taking a job as a teacher is a massive commitment. We've plenty of teachers on the squad, you know, on the Irish squad, but for me now to go into a teaching role, I wouldn't want to you know, fully commit to something like that if I was to, you know, then go back to Harlequins in you know, in a couple of weeks' time. So there's a lot of chopping and changing, but it's all you know, due to COVID, really, that there's just been so much spanners thrown in the works, like, that are just, you know, just presenting more and more challenges, and which means that I'm now, you know, in Dublin working in a coffee shop, whereas this time last year I was a rugby coach for Harlequins, playing for Harlequins.
Being from Cork as well, because I just kind of thought I'd put the connection together. Yourself and Peter O'Mahony, you're the two most passionate people when it comes to singing an anthem. Where does that come from? Like, do you use that to kind of get yourself up and ready for a game when you're playing?
Yeah, definitely. You know, coming from a sporting family, watching sport on the telly, and coming from a sporting like school and parish and town and group of friends, the anthem for me, watching it on the telly. And, you know, I suppose I'm lucky I'm from Cork, because we got a good few trips to Croke Park when I was younger, going up on the bus or the train or whatever. The anthem was always an unbelievable part of the day, you know, and the occasion, and singing it. And I remember like singing it at home and learning the words in school. And so to be singing it on a pitch before going to play in a green jersey, like, that's not a moment to be taken for granted, or it's not a moment to be, you know, it's a moment to kind of grab and use for yourself. Look, so personally for me, yeah, it does. It works for me. I know that not everyone is the same, and some people just like to stand and not sing and just take it in. And but for me, like, singing gives me a bit of energy. Like, I'd be singing anyway, you know, in the dressing room beforehand. I love like a bit of a boogie, a bit of a song, like, to get me going, like, to give me good energy and to make me feel really positive. So like the fact that we go onto the pitch and we get to sing two songs when we're in Dublin, you know, like, that's two opportunities to get, like, you know, get a bit higher in your energy scale, and something that you can't really, you know, replicate or can't buy. Or, you know, you could take a Lucozade shot or something, but you know, it's the feeling of like singing the anthem, that's pretty amazing.
You know, yourself and Hugo are kind of getting the word out there today, but like, happy to kind of lend your voice and kind of get the word out there as well a bit more about it.
Definitely, because I believe that, you know, the conversations around you know, the positive, or let's say the negative responses that are coming from people sitting on the couch, tweeting, tagging a player to say something negative. Like, I think, you know, this campaign will hopefully, like, you know, empower people to feel that they can, you know, object to that, and to realize that that's not the right way to do things, whether it's you yourself that makes those negative comments, or you know someone that makes those negative comments, that this awareness that that's not the right thing to do. You know, if like these cartoons have, you know, they're very difficult watching, they're very cute, and the voice are very cute, and the cartoons are brilliant from Matt, and they're still very difficult to watch and very uncomfortable, but that's then they've achieved their goal. You know, they've made it sound as ridiculous, they've made it look as ridiculous as it sounds. You know, bullying isn't acceptable, and you know, we would have learned that in school and in the workplace. It's just not acceptable. You can't, that's not the way things are done anymore. And I think that social media, especially in a year like this where you don't have as much, you know, contact with your friends to talk about the game or whatever, people have gone very, you know, trigger happy on what they're tweeting and the comments that they're making, and just, I suppose, people wanting to feel part of some kind of bandwagon, or someone feeling really passionately about the opinion they have on a player. But it's actually not acceptable to tag someone or to say things that negatively, because more than likely that person has not really achieved, you know, won't have achieved the same level of success on the rugby pitch that the person they're tweeting about has done. So, you know, you've no right to tag someone, or you've no right to speak about someone that negatively, because, you know, for any mistake or error, you know, fluffed up situation that a player might have found themselves in during a match, you know, they've done a million positive things. So, you know, it's so just typical for, you know, people on the couch to focus on, you know, the negative thing. I remember a really funny tweet that I read a few years ago watching the Olympics. It's like, me on the couch with a mouth full of Pringles watching the Olympics gymnastics. So when they take a tiny step, you know, when they finish their landing and they take a tiny step, it's like me with a mouthful of Pringles. What a loser. And that's as ridiculous as it sounds, you know, like, oh, for goodness sake, him missing a tackle or her, you know, whatever, you know, missing that kick. It's like, well, you're sitting on your backside on your couch, you know, so it's a bit rich coming from you, you know. So I do think that this conversation, you know, that you and I are having now, and these cartoons and everything that Tackle Your Feelings is trying to like put out there and achieve, is like to know and realize that that's not the right way to do things, and that, you know, you and I, or anyone that listens to this, can feel empowered to say, no, sorry now, and object to it with, you know, facts, or actually I know that player and she works really hard, or actually his speciality is, you know, whatever, and he's, you know, maybe he's struggling with confidence or whatever, you know, just to keep that positive, critical but positive conversation going.
Yeah, perfect. Well, some great stuff, Anna. Great to see you involved with it, and good luck now. And at least, as you said, go catch up and read about this new tournament that hopefully you'll be involved in soon enough as well.
I will do. Thanks a million, Pat.
If you haven't already done so, click subscribe on House of Rugby Ireland to never miss a show.
The championship is all set up for an exciting conclusion next Friday, but Ireland are all wrapped up now. It gives us an opportunity now to look back on their campaign through a couple of categories. So we're going to chat about, first off, their best Irish player. So Ian, who do you think throughout the championship has been the standout player for Ireland?
I think consistently probably Robbie Henshaw. You know, I think he stepped up in every game, and then, you know, polished it off, I suppose, with a phenomenal performance against England. So it's exciting for him. You know, he's definitely putting himself forward for a starting spot with the Lions, and he's definitely, you know, stepped up as a real leader in that Irish side.
Yeah, I think I'd agree. I think Robbie's just been, he's outstanding. He's become a real leader in there. And he, what Robbie does is, you know, from playing with them and being in change rooms with them, not the biggest talker, you know, during the week or even before the game. He literally just leads by example, and often the best leaders do that. He never lets you down, and just so many consistent performances by him. And that last one has put him in prime position to start for the Lions. I think in the pack, Tadhg Byrne, as obviously he's picking up the man of the match performances, and he's been a real find for Ireland. Sorry, not that he's been a find, but he's been playing great for Munster for a number of years now, but he probably never got his opportunity, you know, through maybe losing out in selection and injury, but he got it at the start of the Six Nations, and he really took it with both hands. Like, I think he had two or three man of the match performances, and he's also in a great position to be going on that Lions tour now. And then the last one would be Hugo Keenan, just in terms of a new find for Ireland. I think with Rob Kearney leaving and a big void being filled, was left to be filled there, because I think people took for granted for years what Rob did for Ireland and the security he had back there. But geez, Hugo has just taken to Test rugby pretty seamlessly, so very, very impressive as well.
I think he started the last 11 games for Ireland. Like, it's almost like he's number one on the team sheet there at this stage. It's really, really great for him, and good to see the future's bright there. Best Irish moment then, Ferg, what was the standout moment of the championship?
Standout moment, it's got to be that performance in general, I think, against England in the Aviva. I'll say it again, that it's just such a shame there wasn't a crowd there, because I just say it would have been pretty epic, you know. But yeah, that was probably the standout moment for me.
Yeah, Tadhg celebrating that scrum, you know, it just kind of epitomised the game. We overpowered England, you know. It was something that we'd heard a lot about, and I'm sure it was playing on the Irish guys' minds. And just to muscle up like that and to charge over them, it was very satisfying.
I'm surprised one of you didn't mention actually Tadhg Furlong's step on Finn Russell last weekend as the moment of the Six Nations.
Yeah, not a good one for the out-half union, that.
Yeah, I didn't see that step, to be honest.
It wasn't on Twitter.
Yeah, it's literally been everywhere.
I didn't see it. It was great, in fairness. Yeah, what are the biggest letdown then, Ian?
look, I think when you start off the campaign with a loss, it really takes the wind out of your sails. You know, the Grand Slam, the Triple Crown, it's taken away from you straight away. So yeah, look, that Wales performance and you know, it was unfortunate, but that red card probably epitomising that's what that game will probably be remembered for.
Yeah, absolutely. If only they had played a little bit better, a little bit earlier. We'll wrap up by having a quick look ahead to next Saturday's Pro 14 final, Leinster and Munster at the RDS. First off, how many of these Irish players do you think will feature next weekend?
All of them. They'll have, like, this is such a huge game for both clubs. You know, leading into the Rainbow Cup and leading into the Lions, like, this is another, you know, aside from playing a Six Nations match, this is the next best thing for guys to put their hand up for Warren Gatland. And, you know, it's been a barren period for Munster, in their trophy cabinet. It's been pretty empty the last few years, and they really will be, they'll be dying to try put in a performance to get over the line against Leinster. Leinster have beaten them in semi-finals in the Pro 14 over the last number of years, and I do think Munster are in a strong position. They've been playing very good rugby. They just have Joey Carberry back. So it's going to be a tight match. I do think it's going to be a really tight match, but you'd have to think Leinster are favourites.
Yeah, I was just thinking of that, of the depth, and obviously me going with the Munster squad, you know, the depth that Munster have in almost every position across the field, and it's not often that we don't have an injury crisis. Or, like, look at the nine, it's like, you know, Murray will start, but you've got Craig Casey there. Who will start at 10? Who will be the first choice out half? You know, JJ has got us through so many years and so many big moments, but are you going to leave Joey Carberry on the bench? Like, there's so many decisions to make, even looking at the back row with Coombs has been playing phenomenally, Jack O'Donoghue has been playing phenomenally, but then you've got CJ Peter Mahey to come back in. It's the choices that Munster probably lacked a little bit in the past few years.
Then they go, do they put Ty to the back row because he's played so well there? Like,
yeah.
Do they keep him there and then maybe keep Klein and Billy Holland in the second row instead? So, they've got some really nice headaches going into the game in terms of selection.
And Leinster are the same. Like, look at their back row. Like, hopefully Connors will be fit again for next week. Not sure how bad his injury really is. Van der Fleer, Connors, Conan, Ruddock. I'm forgetting people here.
Scott Penny's been playing great stuff.
Scott Penny's been playing brilliantly. There's so many options. Yeah, so many options. It's going to be a mouth-watering final. Hopefully the weather holds up for it. It'll be a great game.
Yeah, like, there's so many players that are playing well on both teams that, like, will they hold off the Irish players, or will the Irish players just slap back in, do you think?
No, I think they'll all come back in. It's too big a game for them not to. You might see one or two of them maybe come off the bench, depending probably on how they've pulled through from that game. There's going to be some sore bodies from that English game. I wouldn't imagine some of them will be able to train at the front end of the week, and then, you know, you're saying, right, are we going to start all of them, considering that they've all been away for the last 2 months? Probably not. So I'd say we'll definitely see a few of them sit on the bench and come on with, you know, 25, 30 minutes to go and make a big impact.
Is that difficult to think, coming back in as a player, as both of you who've done this, coming from, you know, international to provincial, like, learning the moves, especially, you know, there's moves out all around the place, in the backs and the forwards, but is that difficult as well to try and get your head around the different plays involved?
Yeah, it is. Like, there is different systems. It's not that you don't know it. It's just, like, your sharpness with the calls, what you're naming them.
Yeah.
You become accustomed to how Ireland play for two months, and then you're coming back into the Leinster way or the Munster way of playing. You're adjusting playing with different players.
Yeah.
So It is challenging, and quite often it takes a week
to get you going. Usually the setup is, when they finish Six Nations, there's like 2 weeks until the European.
Yeah.
And that week of Pro 14, those guys who are starting
in Six Nations, rested.
They're left off, but then they get integrated back in. Like, we used to get integrated back in to the provincial side, and then you'd get back up to speed with the calls and how the training sessions were run. Yeah. So the fact that there is such a short turnaround, it's going to actually be interesting to see, because they're going to have to get straight back into it, really. And it's such a big game. Like, I can't see either team putting people on the bench. You know, they'll be.
I don't know. I think they will. Like, if you're relying on them performing off the back of one training session, Like, they're not going to be able to train in front end of the week. You've got one session probably on the Wednesday that you've got to get everything gelled back together. So, like, I can't see them all coming back in to start.
Well, yeah, it's a tough one. So you've obviously got, say, Ross and Johnny coming back. So they're both coming back, like, you know. But
then do you drop Luke McGrath? Like, you know, he's been Gibson Park coming back in.
Yeah. It's just some really tough decisions there. It's going to be the standard of that final is going to be really, really high. And it actually, you often see, you know, whether it's Munster or Leinster going into a European game a couple of weeks after the finish of the Six Nations, the performance often spikes from Ireland playing well and the confidence that those guys.
Yeah.
So, but all those guys are coming back and they're playing each other seven days later, and it's just going to make for a great game.
It's bizarre, isn't it? It's a kind of a situation that wouldn't happen in any other year. But
yeah, Luke McGrath is an interesting one there. He's someone who I think Leinster will stick by to start just because of the position he's in. He's in the half-back role. His connection between the backs and the forwards. He's been there for the last 2 months. He's playing great rugby.
And he's been captain a few times, you know, as well.
It's a close call between him and Gibson Park anyway. Hmm. So just because Gibson Park's coming back from Ireland camp, I think that's one that I go, you'd stick with him there and have Jameson coming off the bench.
The other thing is then you've got, like, where does the coach's head at, like Van Graham or Leo Cullen, where's their heads at in terms of, are they going to reward the guys who got them to the Pro 14 final in terms of the played the league games, or are they going to just, you know, throw the...
That never happens. Like that never happens. Like, Ross Byrne has started how many games in the Pro 14? I'm thinking of even over in Glasgow in 2019. You know, Ross Byrne got them there. Johnny didn't play one game until the final.
I understand what you're saying, but it does happen sometimes in maybe one position or maybe two.
No,
I
know
it's not
going to
happen
to
the board, but there's going to be interesting selections from a competitive point of view, but just a tough one for Leo Cullen and Van Graham trying to get back guys back in and get the balance of getting best players on the pitch, but also the best prepared people.
Yeah,
I agree. What do Munster have to do to beat Leinster? Because at the end of the day, we have to acknowledge the fact that Leinster are favourites going into this game.
Yeah, in fairness to Munster, they've been playing good stuff. Like, they put it up to Leinster when they played them down at Thomond Park. Probably should have won the game. You know, they the lion's share of possession and played more rugby. Leinster hung in there as they often do and put together a couple of good passages of play, scored a great try. Like, I think Ross Byrne put a lovely kick through and they got in off the end of it. But it looked like Munster were in control of that game for large parts, but didn't keep the scoreboard ticking over. And we saw that last year in the semi-final. You know, again, they had opportunities, didn't take them. And if they want to get over the line this Saturday, they've got to find a way to get the points on the board when they have those, you know, moments of pressure against Leinster.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, cheers, guys, and cheers to everybody for watching and listening today. A big thank you to producer Pat, Paul, Dermot, Anthony, and everyone that helped in getting this show together. This has been House of Rugby Ireland here on Joe. Slán go fóill.
Slán.
House of Rugby Ireland here on Joe. Game changed.